Okay, I hope everyone feels good. Once again, I have my allergies back. They went away for most of the week, and yet here I am. I got hit with them today again, so I broke down and I went and bought some homeopathic remedy, and it actually worked quite a bit, but I took it too close to the show. So once again, this is Scott Tips on TNS Radio. And I hope you were all there. And a lot has been going on in the world. So there are things that we should discuss. But on the other hand, I happen to have with me a very special guest this time. And actually, it's someone whose radio program I was on. And that's how we actually met, is that I went on her radio program some time ago and spoke about Codex Alimentarius, spoke about a number of things. And this person has written for our National Health Federation magazine. She's an herbalist. She's been a practicing medicinal herbalist for the last, hard to believe, but 30 years. And her name is Marguerite Dunn. She earned a bachelor's in sociology and English, so she's actually an excellent writer, and she has a double master's degree in education and a certification in herbology, which she has studied diligently over the years and actually gives instruction in biology at Marist College there in somewhere on the East Coast. And her other credits include lecturing, writing articles, and she, of course, does a blog for this Herb Companion magazine, Herb Companion magazine, which you can find, and we'll get that web address from her in a moment, although it did go out in the email that was sent to everyone, so you can look for her there along with the other bloggers. And she even has her own radio program, as I mentioned, called WTB on WTBQ.com, the Urban Herbalist. So she's also been profiled herself as the featured herbalist in a recently published book called The New Healers by Dr. Barbara Stevens. So in any event, I want to welcome onto the program Marguerite. It's a little earlier, I was going to talk about some other things, but I think she has a lot of important information, and I don't want to run out of time in speaking with her as we did with some of our other guests. So I think we'll wait for some other information for later. And hello, Marguerite, are you still there?
Hi, Scott. How are you? It's fun to be on your show.
Fine, thank you. I may not be as good an interviewer as you are, but I think we can get across some real good information for the listeners out there. And so I very much appreciate your taking the time to be on the program. And I know in the beginning I already talked a bit about your background, but what have you been doing recently in herbs or in nutrition or in anything like that that maybe our listeners haven't heard about or could benefit from, or you name it, would be out there that would be important for them to know?
Wow, that's a great question because there's so much. Let me just start by saying that, I've been a clinical medicinal herbalist for over 30 years, and I regularly read about 10 publications a month from the health food industry.
I'm
I'm
glad you
all
added
about.
that. I'm glad you added that in because I thought you were going to say Cosmo and some of these others, but no. Okay, you
Cosmo,
didn't do
oh my
that.
goodness. I don't know if they've ever seen a plant. But
I'm teasing you.
there are also maybe about another dozen email newsletters I get.
Yes.
And I'm privileged and lucky enough to have lots of different authors on my show, so they're always sending me books. So one of the thoughts that I had, particularly today, and too bad we're not on video cam so you could see all this stuff spread out in front of me I did for show prep, but I thought how incredibly overwhelming it must be for someone who's just getting started in alternative health. And I'm frequently asked this in my lectures, where do you get started, how you get started, what you do first.
Right.
And sometimes it can kind of be overwhelming. One of the things that I tell people is, if you have a particular health issue, and for many of us who, you know, really live in the health food industry, we all started out with some health condition that was absolutely horrible, and we usually had some negative experiences with Western medicine, and so that's how we found our way into a health food store, and that's certainly what happened with me. And I'll just take a moment, if it's okay, Scott, and tell the listeners what happened to me 100 years ago when I was in college.
Yeah, that long ago.
That long ago. But see, I use herbs, so I'm well preserved. But what happened to me was, you know, I was a college freshman, and I took birth control pills because I was trying to be a smart young woman, proactive and liberated.
Right.
And I even went to the Margaret Sanger Clinic, and they were the forerunners of Planned Parenthood. And they told me that I had to take a particular birth control pill. And I took them for 7 months. I would subsequently find out they were, quote, still in the experimental stages. Thanks a lot. I was a guinea pig.
Oh.
And I started to feel strange and odd and that sort of thing. And I thought, you know, I don't like this. My legs started to ache. And I had just come off of 7 years of dance lessons. And boy, if ballet and modern dance don't make your legs ache, how the heck were these birth control pills doing it? So I said, forget this. And I stopped taking the pills. When I stopped taking the pills, I lost my period. I subsequently gained over 40 pounds.
Jeez.
I became allergic to penicillin. I got a number of different allergies, including being allergic to cats, whom I love very dearly.
Yeah.
And I used to get these 104 fevers that would go on for days.
So that's what happened to me. When I went off birth control pills, I developed these allergies. I see.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing. But anyway.
Okay. No, I'll believe it.
Okay.
So, you know, I went to 9 different doctors, Scott. I
yes.
went to 3 MDs, 3 gynecologists, an endocrinologist, an internist, and a radiologist. And these guys took my blood, they took my urine, and they each had to do their own set of tests. I couldn't say, well, what about the last set? No, we have to do our set. Of course, all of this is out of pocket and costing a lot of money.
Yes.
And I remember they x-rayed my brain like that was going to do something. And I had a 24-hour urine analysis, which was crazy. I had to you know, a young girl, I had to walk around with this little brown paper bag for 24 hours and go to the bathroom in the same jar so that it could be collected and brought back to this laboratory.
How nice.
And all of these guys, all of them, told me the exact same thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you.
Huh.
They didn't say at any point, we can't figure out what's wrong. They certainly weren't going to admit that it was the birth control pills.
Right.
But they said, there's nothing wrong with you. And I thought, how could this be? All right. This went on for 3.5 years. And I was also becoming more successively depressed because I couldn't control my body. I had absolutely no idea what was going on, and nobody would answer my questions. And this drove me crazy. Karmically, one night, I remember exactly where I was. I was living in Greenwich Village on Thompson Street, and I was actually laying down in bed, and I was crying because I'd gotten back the last set of test results from a doctor. And they said, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. And I just didn't know where to go. And a friend of mine called me on the phone, and he said, what's the matter? I said, the doctor told me there's nothing wrong with me. And he said to me, let me take you to my chiropractor. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, he's going to crack your spine and prescribe some herbs. And I thought, you're kidding. I've never heard of that. And I figured, what the hey? You know, so I go to the chiropractor. I was in the middle of 104 fever. And when the chiropractor cracked my spine, it broke the fever.
Huh.
And he told me what herbs to use. And within 2 weeks, nearly 20 pounds fell off of my body. I got my period back. And I said, okay, I'm in. Show me where to sign on the dotted line. And I've been studying herbs and working with herbs and talking to ethnobotanists and old curanderas and being with people in the garden ever since. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't go back. And it's Mother Nature's way. Humankind evolved over the last million years having a symbiotic relationship with plants, and they are what work. And I have seen again and again and again herbalism take care of particular health issues that medications haven't or that nothing else has, and it works.
I remember very well when you gave me some advice that about cleavers for cats and how you can make a tea out of cleaver, the herb, which costs next to nothing. I think when I ordered some, it cost all of $5 to get three different bags of it because I wanted to be sure I had enough, and it was actually more than enough. And how you make the tea by heating the water to boiling, and then you take a handful, and once it comes to boiling, you turn off the heat, and then you throw in the handful or put it in, let it steep for a certain period of time. I forget now, like maybe 20 minutes. And then you strain it out, and you let the cat drink it, and it helps to cleanse their kidneys.
Yes, and it really cleanses their kidneys and lymphatic system.
And lymphatic, yes, thank you. I had forgotten that. And so it was marvelous, and I suppose it would work for humans as well, but it certainly worked for cats who have one of their most vulnerable spots, at least if they, as they age, are their kidneys. So in any event, I really thank you for that very helpful advice that came from your knowledge of herbs.
Yeah, and they don't show you on Animal Planet big cats eating herbs because it's more fun to show you, you know, a lion ripping an antelope's head off or something. But all of the animals in nature, even the carnivores like cats and the big cats, they all eat plants. They all do. And yeah. I watch my own cats when they go out in the morning. The first thing they do is they start nibbling on the greens. And that's what keeps them healthy. So we should be doing that too. We should be nibbling on our greens too.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. I think it's very important. Of course, I'm usually one who's better at giving that advice than taking it. So I have to be reminded a lot of times it's harder for me to do it because my natural proclivity is to eat carbohydrates. I notice when I, you know, work a lot writing articles or having to be in my head thinking and writing that I really crave carbohydrates. And I don't know if there are any herbs that take care of that or if there's something I should be doing.
It sounds like you're on a carbohydrate treadmill because actually carbohydrates, of course, are double sugars. And I know when I talk to my college students, they all think that, you know, a nice chocolate bar or granola bar are exactly what they need to help them do their studies. But actually, what would really be better is a nice salty bag of chips and salt, anything on the salty end of the spectrum, because that will bring you back into your body. Sugar takes you out of your body, and salt brings you back into your body.
And especially good, healthy salt. Well, I don't crave sweet things. I crave just carbohydrates. And I know those get converted into sugar. But one of the things I do is I try to have oils with them to slow down the absorption of it so they aren't quickly converted into sugar in your body and then trigger that insulin release. And that seems to work very well for me.
One of the things I found that really cuts that carb craving is eating a nice little carrot.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
You know, just try
it. You mean a raw carrot?
One of those little designer carrots, you know, the little teeny ones. They're real cute, you know.
Right. Yeah, the little baby carrots.
The little baby carrots.
Thank you.
So, Scott, this is the Year of the Rose, according to the International Herb Association. And I thought it, at least if we're going to talk about herbs, we should educate your listeners about what herb is being honored this year.
Okay. So, I didn't know herbs were ever honored, but all right, I'm game. Is this a trick question?
Is this a gosh, yes. Last year it was actually horseradish and the year before dill.
Oh.
But this year, the Year of the Rose.
So who picks the year? I mean, who gets to pick? Can I pick
the next? International Herb Association invented this and they get to pick. So,
oh, gosh. Okay.
They're the ones who decided. And that's okay because they've got really good taste. So
okay.
They took rose and they wrote, this is, I'm quoting from a little article in Taste for Life. The International Herb Association is celebrating the rose this year for its beauty as well as its other appealing qualities. All right. Fossil evidence traces the genus Rosa back 35 million years. People began to cultivate roses in gardens some 5,000 years ago, most likely in Asia. In the centuries since then, they've been symbols of love, beauty, war, and politics. During the Roman period, they were grown extensively in the Middle East and used as confetti at celebrations.
As confetti? Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Well, you know, just throw up those rose petals.
Right.
And also to make perfume. The factions fighting for control of England in the 15th century were symbolized by roses. So that's why it was the War of the Roses. So roses are very important, and I just wanted to mention rose hips, of course, which are medicinal.
Yes.
And Louise Tenney, who's a great master herbalist, tells us that rose hips are antiseptic, antispasmodic, astringent, blood purifier, nutritive, stomatic, and of course they're loaded with calcium, iron, potassium, silica, sodium, sulfur, vitamins A, B complex, C. How many times have you seen C in rose hips in various vitamin formulas? D and
right.
E. And Dr. James Duke, who is just such a great, fun, wonderful spirit grandfather of the whole health food industry right now, tells us that Rosa Canina, what he says is, pick up a bottle of vitamin C, read the label, and you're quite likely to find that ascorbic acid accompanied by rose hips. Rose hips are actually fruit, and they sort of resemble small ovals. They form at the top of the five-petaled flower. So arthritis, chills, colds, flu, gastritis, gout, headaches are the folk uses. They go back many, many years. So it's the Year of the Roses, and nice time to go pick up some roses for someone special and celebrate what they do.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. Always good advice. Just what color do you get? White roses, red roses, yellow roses. I guess if you're from Texas, you get yellow roses. But
yeah, you get yellow roses. White roses usually symbolize death, don't they?
Well, you're right. They do. But does now, a quick question. So does the color of the rose influence the potency of the rose's medicinal qualities? And what are the medicinal qualities?
Well, I just read some of those medicinal qualities. It's actually the rose hip that is what we use medicinally, and that's that little
the
round part at the top. They form near the top of the five-petaled flower, and they vary in color from whitish to deep pink. All right, and so that part of the rose plant is actually called a fruit. All right. And the plant from which this particular fruit comes isn't your common garden rose. Remember, there are many, many kinds of different roses. But the wild dog rose, whose leaves are greener and smoother than the more familiar ornamentals.
Marguerite, let me ask you something. Practical application here. How can our listeners make use of roses to improve their health?
Well, you mean the roses, the flowers themselves?
Or the rose hips, sorry. Okay, rose hips.
Well, the rose hips, what you can do with the rose hips is you could literally eat them, or you could dry them and put them into a tea. I like to make a tea of oat straw and rose hips. They combine very nicely. The oat straw is very soothing and calming. It's great if you're emotionally stressed. As a matter of fact, if you're emotionally stressed, the oat straw and then the rose hips is great because the C in the rose hips is going to help nourish you. And if you're under a lot of stress, your immune system is going to take a hit. So the oat straw and the rose hips are going to help. And it's a nice cup of tea, and it's actually a little bit thicker than, let's say, a green tea. So you've gotten a real nourishing beverage that's filling.
Right.
So you could do that.
That way. Huh. All right. And then what else would you recommend? Well, let me ask you a real question. So, you know, it's the end of the world. And people are stuck in their houses or in their communities. But before it became the end of the world, everyone was very clever. At least some people were very clever. And they stocked up their medicine cabinets with certain medicines they knew they would need or might anticipate needing. And I would ask you, what would you recommend that these people, these wise, you know, industrious ants who saved up for the winter or the hard times, what would they keep in their medicine cabinet as an herbal remedy? Which ones are most important?
Oh, boy. Wow, that's a great question. So it's the end of the world or you're on a desert island and you get to take a couple of herbs with you.
Yeah, what do you need to help keep healthy? And sorry to hit you with that out of the blue because it just occurred to me as I was reading your bio for the listeners, and I thought, gosh, this is something that they might like to know.
I think the first herb that I would take would be burdock root.
Really? Burdock
root? Yes, burdock root, because burdock root is a liver cleanser.
Okay.
It's a blood cleanser. More than a liver cleanser, it's a blood cleanser. So it travels all through the blood system, grabbing toxins. And I remember when I had my apothecary, I created an herbal formula called When in Doubt Detox. If you don't know anything else to do to your body, and who knows what germs are going to be on that desert island or the end of the world or wherever the heck it is you're going to be, you just detoxify your blood and let the body's own natural healing systems take over, because the body knows what to do.
Right.
So I would take lots of burdock, and in Japan, burdock root is actually eaten as a vegetable. It's got much the same place as potatoes do in American cuisine. It's the side dish that you dress up here and there. But that's what burdock does.
So they have fish and burdock root. Yeah, I'll take an order of fish and burdock root.
There you go. That's what you could do.
Yeah, instead of fish and chips. Yeah. No.
Fish and chips.
Hey, it's a tough audience out there. It's a tough audience out there today. So, tough crap.
That's okay.
I'm not getting any laughs out of this. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I like to add burdock into my chicken soup.
Right.
When you make a good root soup, that'll cure anything. Throw in some burdock.
Do you have to saute it first or cook it first?
You just put the root into the soup, because when you make chicken soup, you know, you take a chicken breast or a chicken thigh.
Right.
Sometimes the dark meat is better for the soup, and
you just
put it in the water and let it boil for a half an hour. You can slice up some celery, which is great, and then, boy, you throw in some burdock and some yellow dock.
Oh,
yellow dock is fantastic. Yellow dock cleans metal out of the body.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
So, you know,
I love the end of
the world, and you've got all that stuff going around, or you've been eating tuna fish out of cans for years.
Yes.
You need to get metal out of your body. So if you eat that soup, that's going to really, really help keep you healthy.
Okay, and let me loop back for a moment, Marguerite, and ask you a quick question. So you had mentioned burdock root before. Was that also good for arthritis? Or was it the rose hips that was good for arthritis? I'm sorry.
Rose hips is better for arthritis, but I would consider burdock for rheumatoid arthritis because rheumatoid arthritis is oftentimes a collection of toxins in the joints.
I see.
And if you regularly keep the blood system cleansed, then the toxins are not going to collect in the joints, and then you'll be pain-free.
So, okay, well, that's good advice right there. And I didn't mean to sidetrack us back. It just was that on the chat room, someone had asked that question, and it took me a while to catch up with the question. So that was
that's okay.
They will send me questions, and so there will be things like that. But the yellow dock will help cleanse out the metals, getting back to yellow dock. And does that work synergistically with cilantro? Because I know cilantro helps clean out mercury.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and then how much burdock root, or yellow dock, excuse me, would you take?
You mean drinking it as a tea or ground up as a capsule or
whatever you think
soup?
Is... Yeah. Well, in the chicken soup, you would also add the yellow dock as well as the burdock root?
If I was making a pot of chicken soup, let's say it's maybe 3 quarts, okay?
Right.
Then what I would do is I would add 2 heaping tablespoons each of burdock and yellow dock. Because you're going to slow boil it for a half an hour, and that's going to draw out the medicinal constituents. And that's pretty strong stuff. It really is.
Okay.
You know, and
does it run the taste of the soup, though, or do you even notice it?
Well, how do you define ruin? It will certainly give it more of an earthy kind of taste.
Okay.
You know, if you feel like you want to add some additional chicken, or maybe I know cilantro adds a great flavor, or if you want to add a little bit of veggie sal, you know,
veggie sal being vegetable salt.
Correct.
Okay, just for those who may not know.
Right.
And, okay. Well, actually, that sounds like a really hearty, healthy soup to make, and because of the chicken, it's going to have a lot of L-arginine in it. So that's very healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so overall, that sounds like a real winner to me. And something even I, who have trouble, I have trouble boiling water, I could even make that. wait a minute, how do we boil this water? Oh, yeah. So that sounds good. So, okay, so medicine, back to the medicine cabinet for the end of the world. So we have burdock root in there. Maybe we have yellow dock. Is there anything else herbally that you would recommend we stock
well,
our...
Well, I would recommend Pau de Arco because Pau de Arco is an immune system booster, and it's also an antimicrobial.
Okay.
And so since you're... See, cleaning out the blood is one approach to health, and then boosting the immune system is another approach to health. So now you don't know what kinds of germs and toxins are released. You don't know what's on that desert island and that sort of thing. And Pau de Arco is just such a really, really good booster. And while many people use echinacea, which I love, and echinacea is wonderful, Pau de Arco is a little bit more of an antimicrobial. You can also bring along some echinacea if you want to. That's fine. Echinacea is going to grow your white blood cells, but Pau de Arco comes in and its auxiliary troops.
Okay.
And
I forgot to say for our listeners that Pau de Arco has been written about extensively as an anti-cancer agent as well.
Since you're my attorney and you're here, I can say that.
Yes, that's right. And right. Yes, speaking as your 300-pound Samoan attorney, I can I can tell you that, as Hunter S. Thompson would say, that it's okay to say that. There was a book, I remember when it came out, called Second Opinion. I mean, actually, there are a ton of books called Second Opinion, but this one that came out, oh, maybe 30 years ago, about 25 years ago, it was called Second Opinion, and it talked about Pal-Darco, which was all the hot rage at the time, at that time, as an anti-cancer agent. But I see it's withstood the test of time, and it's actually good for a number of things, as you just mentioned. I actually hadn't realized it was good for anything other than, you know, its anti-cancer effects, but obviously it is.
Yes, it's a great antiviral, antimicrobial, antifungal, and it's very, very effective. It has the ability to increase red blood cells, and it gives the body great vitality by increasing the resistance to disease. You know, it works in a way that adds energy to the body, and one of the issues around ill health is the enervating effect that can be. One becomes tired, and so
right.
You know, you want to.
Are there any herbs that help you? This is really off the wall question, but are there any herbs that would help you withstand hunger pains, for example? Because I would presume that food could get scarce if things really went pear shaped. And people might need something to help either eat or at least stave off the hunger pains. Is there anything like that?
I can't think of anything. You know, I know that when you eat green vegetables, which are actually quite nourishing, the body recognizes that it's being filled with nutrients, and so the body starts absorbing the nutrients. I mean, one of the reasons that people sometimes overeat is because when they do eat a lot of foods that are devoid of nutrients, three pieces of chocolate cake, And the sugar creates one form of craving, but another mechanism that's actually going on is the body is saying, well, wait a minute, we don't have enough vitamins and minerals to take care of everything the body needs. Let's eat some more until we get that. And people mistake that and they say, oh, I'll have another piece of chocolate cake.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you to eat the most nutrient-rich food around you.
Yes.
And for people who are, you know, retraining their taste buds, even if you do only eat one or two baby carrots at a time, start there. Start with that wonderful sprig of parsley that comes on a plate that a lot of people throw away. It's
yes.
bitter. It helps with the digestive system. It cleanses out the kidneys. And even if you eat that, it's a filler, you know,
yeah.
and that's what the body is looking for.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. And, okay, another question then. So say there's been radiation, maybe it's Fukushima or worse. And, what plants, herbs would you recommend we take to protect ourselves from the effects of radiation? Is there anything in particular?
Wow.
I mean, cilantro comes to mind just because of its its mercury effect, but I'm not really sure of that. I could stand corrected.
That's a good, you know, a million years ago when God and Mother Nature were sitting in the Garden of Eden, sipping tea, designing our bodies.
Yes.
They didn't figure out, you know, stuff like this. Okay. They just didn't. So offhand, I'm just going to say, you know, one should protect oneself. This kind of reminds me of, there was a year, I think about 10 years ago, when a very nice young man brought his mother to see me. She had had two breast implants put in her body, and they leaked.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, all over her body, well, in about 10 different places, she had these horrible, disfiguring red welts that had risen up. And what had happened was the silicone had leaked out of the breast implants, traveled through the bloodstream, and found its way into these various pockets all over her body. One of them, I recall, was on the back of her left calf.
Yes.
And she'd gone to see medical doctors who had told her that, yeah, they could fix it. They would just cut the muscle off of her leg, and she could use crutches for the rest of her life, and that was how they were just going to slice her body.
Hey, that's the easy answer.
There you go. So she was just heart sick, and her son was terrified, and you know, what do you do? Okay, what's the name of the herb for that one? And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I don't know what the name of her condition is except leaky breast implants.
Yeah.
And what I figure in my mind is the goal to have the name of some diagnosis, or is the goal to return the body to health? So then I thought, well, if the silicone could travel through the bloodstream to those pockets and collect in her body, the silicone could travel away from those pockets in her body through the bloodstream.
Yes.
So I put together an herbal formula that had about 6 herbs in it. 3 of them were burdock, yellow dock, and milk thistle. And I just said to her, start drinking this tea.
Okay.
You're going to drink 3 cups a day. And that's going to be, you know, we're going to start with 3 cups a day. And then we're going to go up to 4 cups a day after about a week. And
so,
you're going to drink this tea, and you're going to get the stuff out of your body.
And so did it work?
Well, what happened was about 2.5 days later, she calls me up, and she tells me that she's very, very dizzy, and she can't stand up.
Right.
And I said to her, stop drinking the tea. My theory, once again, was, so much of the silicone had been released into the bloodstream that her body couldn't process it, even though the milk thistle was working very, very hard to keep her liver clean. It was such a toxic assault on her body systems. And I said to her, just drink 8 glasses of water a day for the next 3 days, which she did. Luckily for me in this case, her son was on my side, and he kept saying, Mom, you could do this, Mom, you could do this, Mom, you could do this. You definitely need a cheering section when you start on a protocol like this.
Yeah.
So then after 3 days, I said to her, okay, look, stop being dizzy. I want you to drink this herb formula, but what we're going to do is you're going to drink 1 cup a day.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot less, and you want to get this done, but let's try 1 cup a day. Let's go more slowly so your body can handle it. So she was willing to stay the course. So she started drinking 1 cup a day and seemed to feel nothing. But then after a week, she says she kind of felt like something was going on and something was getting a little bit better. She
right.
was waking up a little bit more refreshed.
Uh-huh.
Long story short, we went very, very, very slow. Sometimes you need to go fast, and sometimes you need to go slow.
Right.
We went very slowly, Scott. It took 3 years.
Gosh. Did it work?
It worked.
Okay. Well, that's an amazing story. And that was just with milk seed thistle, an extract?
There were actually about 6 herbs in the formula. I have the whole formula written down in my records, but 3 of the herbs were burdock, yellow dock, and milk thistle.
Milk thistle, I see.
We haven't talked about yet. Milk thistle is such a great herb to help cleanse the liver, and it's so good it can regenerate liver cells. So if there's anyone listening who has been a cocaine addict or an alcoholic, something like that, into, you know, has had that kind of experience, that this milk thistle will help restore the body.
Oh, that's terrific. I know some people who could use that. I know occasionally I've taken it for periods of time just to sort of help keep my liver, you know, in good shape. And it seems to, it's actually one of the herbs that I actually seem to notice an effect from. Someone else, one of our listeners asked a question, Marguerite, and that is, and for those of you joining us, we're talking with Marguerite Dunn, an expert herbalist from the East Coast of the U.S., and she's on the line with us now from the East Coast. In any event, they asked the question, is there any herb that you know of to fight against chemtrails? You know how chemtrails are being laid down in the sky, and metals, high metal, especially aluminum and barium, will trickle down. And in fact, underneath those chemtrails, they found like 15,000-fold concentrations of aluminum and barium. Is there anything that would help get those metals out? Maybe you already mentioned it, like the burdock root, or the burdock, I'm sorry, yellow dock and the cilantro. But is there anything else you would recommend?
You know, I'm sitting here, Scott, gripping my chair right now.
Uh-oh, okay.
You could get the camera to do a close-up. Deidre Imus, who is married to Don Imus, the national radio star.
Yeah.
Deidre Imus has written a fabulous series of books. I like her very much. She has been a guest on The Urban Herbalist. And she's written a fabulous series of books your readers may be interested in, which are directed towards the folks at home who want to get started. And I like her books, and I like what she has to say. And one of the statistics I remember from her book is that, and let me get this right, there are about 18,000 chemicals, toxic chemicals in our environment that the average American comes into contact with daily.
Yeah.
Now, that's a drag, okay?
That's a nice way to put it, yes.
Yeah, and so I've mentioned these herbs. I'm also going to mention that spirulina is a blood cleanser. Wheatgrass juice is a blood cleanser. Chlorella. These are, spirulina and chlorella are sea vegetables, folks. Chlorella is fantastic for getting metals out of the body.
Okay.
But you know, it's not like, I mean, from Western medicine, we've sort of gotten this idea that if you've got this one thing over here, you need this one drug. If you've got this other thing over here, you need this other drug.
I see. That's why you're gripping the chair.
Right. You know, a lot of these things help with everything, and if we go back to the Renaissance herbalist and the Renaissance period of the time, I'm very fond of an herbalism, but the gatherer, the keeper of the hearth, would get up every day, get her gathering basket. That's why women still have pocketbooks, because they used to grab their gathering basket and go out every day. But anyway, she'd get her gathering basket, and she'd go out, and she would gather 1 dozen, 2 dozen, maybe 30 to 3 dozen herbs within a 2 to 3 mile radius of the home and bring those homes. And she had to cure everything with that. You know, female problems, influenza, gout, flaming arrows. You know, whatever illness there was, the very earliest forms of cancer and tumors and other things. So if you regularly partake in a lot of these vegetables and herbs, it's going to work on a lot of these issues. The idea is to detoxify your body. If you regularly, you know, I regularly use detoxifying herbs all the time, and I know I'm not eating cheeseburgers, french fries, and a Coke. I haven't run into any flaming arrows lately. they skipped over my house to drop the last bomb, so but I also know that I'm coming in contact with 1800 toxic chemicals every day.
Right. I mean, just when you drive on a on a auto route or something, on a freeway, on a motorway, you're picking up all sorts of toxic elements that are thrown off of car tires and all sorts of things. So, I mean, just that alone, let alone the air that you breathe or the chemtrail residue that floats down or the chemicals in our foods and waters and the like. So.
Exactly. Exactly. And I just want to give a shout out right now to both Deidre and Don Imus for two reasons. One, I admire the ranch they have for kids with cancer. I think it's a great charity event. And the other thing is, I don't know if your listeners are aware of this or not, Don Imus himself has prostate cancer.
Yeah. And well, they may not know Don Imus because most of our listeners are in Europe. So they may
well,
not.
Well, what's significant about him is that he's had cancer for several years, is not using any medications. He's using all herbs.
Right.
And I just want to illustrate the fact, here's a national figure who's doing it herbally and taking care of that, and it would be nice if he got more recognition. And it would be nice if the wider press carried that story.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. But it's good that he's recognized that he's doing it. Yeah, one of the members of our National Health Federation Board of Governors, he's had prostate cancer for 20 years, and he's been controlling it very well. In fact, I was just speaking with him, was it yesterday or day before yesterday? I think the day before yesterday. And he's quite a guy. I mean, he's an MD. He's been practicing, but he has a really open mind, which is unusual for a lot of MDs, a lot of medical doctors. And so it is something that has helped him survive. And that's, you know, that's great. I think bottom line is that anyone who will take enough antioxidants, they can help protect themselves. And a lot of herbs seem to have a lot of antioxidants in them, which make, you know, like, and I always pronounce this differently than everyone else. So forgive me if I say it wrong, but curcuma or, you know, curcumin and is full. Yeah. Now, turmeric is what people mostly know it as, but curcumin is that really active part of it and has an Indian spice and is just chock full of antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely good. Do you ever use that in any of your, talks or suggestions, shall I say?
Well, first of all, I'm a real big fan of East Indian food.
Okay.
I use it all the time.
Yeah.
It's an antibacterial, an antifungal, anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antioxidant. I mean, but this is, and Rose, Anne-Marie Colden does a great job of this. She has a great book out called Food and Healing. I can't remember now if I've written a review for you on that. If I haven't, I'll write one in my book. Anyway, it's not just the idea that now I'm going to take six big capsules of turmeric or, or pau de arco or something like that. That's that's the mindset that Western medicine taught us. What you do is you go out and you gather in the forest. You eat some of these leaves and some of these roots and some of these berries and some rose hips and some of the seeds from the milk thistle and some a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And you do that every day. And that's actually what our ancestors' bodies look like.
Yes.
So if you get into that habit regularly, then your body's going to be grounded, protected, have all the nutrients that it needs, and that's the way it's going to work. That's the way it's really going to work and heal. So make some curried food tonight.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, would that apply to someone who's concerned about arterial blockages, for example, just a good mix of those different herbs, or is there anyone in particular that would be especially good for arterial blockages? Besides recommending chelation therapy, which helps remove arterial blockages really well, But if we just focus on herbs, it probably more the generic, you know, range.
Yeah, you know, I think I would go to the diet. I would be very, very careful about my diet. I would do a vegetarian diet for a month, and I would really, really focus on the greens.
And since 60% of arterial blockages are caused by, or at least they find as the culprit, calcification, not cholesterol, by the way, but calcification, especially those people living in Ireland or the British Isles, they tend to consume large amounts of dairy products, which are rich in calcium but very poor in magnesium. Consequently, the calcium tends to go in the wrong places, and so perhaps they might want to watch that as well. But that's just my little throw-in.
About that, Scott, as well as the fact that nobody is lactose tolerant, because after age of four, we stop producing the digestive enzyme necessary to digest dairy, because Mom Nature figures that we have been weaned from our mother's breast. We are the only species on Earth that continues to digest dairy after our infancy period. You know, baby whales stop drinking milk, baby tigers stop drinking milk, puppies and kittens stop drinking milk, but humans continue to try to digest dairy. And then we've got all of these problems, particularly breathing problems. And people say, gee, why do I have these breathing problems? Okay, and the Western medicine might say to you, oh, you have to come in and get a shot every week.
Right.
The body is reacting to the dairy. Try cutting out all dairy for a week and tell me what happens to your body, you, whoever you are out there.
Right. Good point.
It's one of the first things that I suggest to my students is, you know,
okay,
try that.
And then to detox daily, is it again what you've recommended for the medicine cabinet? That is burdock root, yellow dock, milk thistle, maybe Powdarco, and chlorella and spirulina. Is that what you could do for a daily detox?
Yeah, and you don't have to do everything. I mean, you might make yourself a nice blueberry smoothie, put in some rice milk, some blueberries. Add chlorella is very powerful. You can add about a third of a teaspoon and throw in some ice because it's very hot outside. And that's a nice drink and it's going to help your body and it works. There you go.
Yeah.
And you're all set.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And it's something you could do daily. You don't have to, do you have to take a break from it periodically or anything like that?
I would vary my routine on everything. I would never do the same regimen every single day for, you know, year in and year out.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, there are some things, you know, like let's just say you're taking vitamin C regularly. 6 days on, 1 day off, 6 weeks on, 1 week off, month on, 6 months, 1 month off.
Okay, so I shouldn't sleep regularly then, huh? Because that's kind of
Well, that's not a nutrient.
Oh, okay.
You got to do that.
Okay. Well, you got me on that one. Let's see. What else? Breathe air daily. Yeah, okay. I can do that. All right. Well, let me see if there are any particular questions that I might have missed, because to be honest, I wasn't always looking at the chat line. Let's see.
Well, let's see, Scott, can you get Ma Huang where you are?
That's a good question. You know, to be honest, I don't know. Probably the government's outlawed it because it has ephedra in it, but that would be a good one for the medicine cabinet, wouldn't it?
That would certainly be a great one for allergies. Ma Huang is outstanding. You shouldn't take it for very long, but if you have true allergies, and true allergies come twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. It's reflective of pollen. Now, if you are blowing your nose all year, that's not hay fever, folks. That is actually more than likely a food allergy, or maybe you have mold in your home.
Uh-huh.
So you should be able to differentiate between what's going on. But if you have true hay fever, then, and you drink one cup of mahuang tea a day for 2 or 3 weeks during the spring hay fever season, and then the fall is usually a little bit shorter, a week or two, you should be okay.
Or you could drink it every other day. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's a great idea because, and someone mentioned Mormon tea is a good source of ephedra, but that's a good idea because at the very least in the Chinatown sections of European cities, you can usually find all sorts of herbs, even if you can't in the health food stores. And the more I think about it, the more I think that I could get it here if I don't actually already have it. I have a pretty well stocked cabinet of things that are tough to get in Europe, but that, of course, are easier to get in the U.S. and somehow they make their way across the Atlantic. So, don't ask me how. So I have a pretty well stocked medicine cabinet, except for one thing, because of my allergies. You know, I went for years without them. I mean, I had them. I learned when I was a teenager that I was allergic to grass, and I always thought, you know, it was normal to itch if you lay down on the grass, but didn't realize that wasn't normal. And then later in life, I got some live cell injections, and it basically cured me of allergies for 8 years. But now the effect has started to wear off, and it kind of caught me by surprise. And I found taking a gram of quercetin a day really has it under control. But I've been running out of quercetin, so I've been rationing it out. And so in any event, that has helped. But I like your advice on the mahuang tea, and I'll certainly take it. That's really good advice. Well, let me see. We're just about out of time. And let me see. Yeah, I think what makes me allergic to grass is probably my Scottish, English, Irish, you know, ancestry, my Celtic ancestry that does something there that I don't know. But anyway, it's just a supposition. Well, okay, everyone. Anything sort of in parting, Marguerite, you'd like to say to the listeners? Or I think you covered things really, really well, and I appreciate it. And I kind of like our medicine cabinet approach because you gave some really great suggestions for us to stock regularly in our medicine cabinets that could really be helpful. And I know myself, I'm going to go out and get some burdock root and some yellow dock because those are two things I don't have already. And I will get that. I know in Europe they sell the milk thistle. Usually they're like in ampules, at least on the continent. They're in ampules, and you break them and drink them. And it's actually an extract that's very good. So anyway, anything you can think of. What's your website, by the way, that people could go to? What could we put up?
www.herbsonhudson.com. And I just want to say thank you, Scott, for having me today. It was a pleasure to do the show. And the next time you're in New York, I'll give you a shovel. And you can dig up the burdock root that I have in my backyard. And you can cut down some of the milk thistle. But you got to be careful because this stuff is really a thistle. And I get stung every time I go back there to cut. Every single time. Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, I might take you up on that. And I appreciate it. And I really, really appreciate your sharing your wisdom with us today. And I'll just stay in touch. So everyone, I'll be back on Wednesday next week, same time. And if you have any special topics you would like to have us discuss, well, talk to the TNS people and they'll pass them along because I'm open to suggestions. But I think we've all benefited from knowing more, a bit more about herbal remedies or herb from a master herbalist and someone who's been practicing this art for 30 years and has even taught on the subject and certainly has written on the subject. And I urge you to go to her website, www.herbsonhudson.com. So anyway, thank you all And the listeners on the chat line are thanking you, Marguerite, so appreciate it. And we'll be in touch, okay?
Okay, thanks so much. Take care. Bye.